Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is my opinion, and I'm going to seek my approval. Do I approve of me?
Love doesn't have any expectations. It doesn't seek something in return. It gives because it wants to.
At our core, all of us have these feelings of being unlovable and inadequate. And until we start to care for those parts of ourselves, we can't really have the outer successes that we long for.
Does money buy you intuition, insight, creativity, higher vision, transcendence? No. Money does buy you pleasure, and pleasure is good, but it's not enough. We need fulfillment.
Welcome to the Unwind Podcast, a show to help you pause, relax, reflect, and be curious. I'm your host, Poppy Jamie, a best-selling author and entrepreneur exploring the human experience. I interview world-leading thinkers, shaping ideas around the mind, health, spirituality, philosophy, and culture. I'm often reminded that thoughts become things, so we need to choose the good ones. I hope this show helps you to do that too. Hello, everyone. Prepare yourself to be shocked in this episode. We have a fascinating guest on. She is incredibly inspiring. It's Valentina Milanova. She's an entrepreneur fighting to change the world of gynecological health. And if you or anyone you know experiences painful periods, then this episode is going to be even more fascinating. And I hope you will share the episode because everybody needs to hear what Valentina has to say. She is the founder of the company Day, and it's changing thousands of women's lives daily through multiple ways. Firstly, Valentina designed safe tampons that help alleviate period pain through locally administering anti-inflammatory pain relief in the vaginal area. Now, if you are someone that experiences endometriosis or period pain, you will usually just rely on paracetamol, ibuprofen, which then has to go through the whole body. But through actually using tampons to help with that pain, it is a much better and more efficient way to target the pain and reduce it. Secondly, Day has created diagnostic tampons. So if you feel that you may have an infection or worried about your fertility or looking at pain relief, then you can use one of these Day diagnostic tampons, send it to Valentina's Day Labs, and you will get your results back and also have the ability to connect with a medical professional through the platform. Valentina noticed that so few women screen their vagina and so many problems go undetected. And if some infections go undetected for too long, then they can have horrendous consequences long term, like infertility or even more painful periods that just could be solved with regular testing. So this is why she invented an effective way for women to understand their vaginal health in a cost-effective and time-efficient way. Through Valentina's platform, as I said, you can connect with a medical specialist, so an OBGYN, to talk through your results, to understand your vagina health more, and you can even get your prescription through the platform, which is just incredible. Along with this, you can find out how you can prevent cervical cancer. It truly is just mind-blowing what Valentina's created, and so it is just such an honor to have her on the show, given that she fights every single day for better access for women's health. But as I said, prepare to be shocked. Some of the revelations in this episode, I am still having so many thoughts over. My brain doesn't even compute over some of the things she shared about just how toxic the average tampon is and the fact that there is so little regulation in protecting women in their most sensitive area of their body. And so this is why, thank God for Valentina using her voice and using her brains to create a safer product for women. I am very excited for you to listen to Valentina. I hope you learn as much as I have learned, and I hope you are as outraged as I am. And also, thank God there are solutions out there. We just need to know about them. So enjoy. Do you have a favorite quote you return to often and why?
I really love the poem by Rudyard Kipling, If. And when I was fundraising for Day, I used to just play it in my headphones before I would go into the investor meetings, because it's a very male-focused poem. The ending of the poem says, if you do all of this, you'll be a man, my son. I just changed that in my mind. But, you know, there's one element in that poem where it says, if you had to build everything that you've built all over again and stoop down and start with worn out tools, you should do it. And I feel like the entrepreneurial journey that I've been on and the entrepreneurial journey that a lot of people in gynecological health are on is very similar. Like, there's always these like stopping and starting points. So I love that. I love that poem.
What is a life lesson you're reminded of regularly?
During the COVID times, we had some of the more challenging times in the company. And, you know, we had one of the first outbreaks of COVID within our team, within the business at the end of February. Six people fell sick with COVID. And that was at the time when we didn't yet know what COVID was. There was all of the speculation of, do you die when you get it? Will there be hospital beds? Will there be care? And that whole period of like the beginning of COVID, needing to keep manufacturing going, needing to look after the team, having to go through a process of furlough so that we could continue existing because fundraising was cut off. We couldn't fundraise at the beginning of COVID. That was the most challenging time of my life ever. I was just living in the factory that I had to break into because our landlord had shut access to it, and running all of the manufacturing effectively by myself, while also fundraising, while trying to look after the team. And for such a long time, I couldn't even look back on this period. Like, for example, when I would scroll through my phone to look at old photos, I would just like skip super fast through 2020. I couldn't at all allow myself to think back because it was so traumatic and sad. Now, when I think back to it, I'm really grateful that I had such tough experiences because they taught me so much about human nature, how to be a good leader, the importance of perseverance in entrepreneurship, but in gynecological health in particular. So now I'm really grateful that I went through, you know, this incredibly hard time. And it is true what they say, that the most challenging experience of your life are the ones that enrich you the most.
And this leads me, I guess, to my last of the first questions, which is, how do you define success?
I don't think you ever reach success. I think that's an illusion, and I don't think you should chase success, particularly in entrepreneurship. I really subscribe to this view that every day is day one, and every morning you have a new opportunity to do things differently and to, you know, chase your dreams even further. So don't really think about success that much. I guess if I had to envision an end point for Day, for my company, I would love for us to have created a world where the fact that you're born with a female physiology doesn't mean that you can't engage in the same activities that someone with a male physiology can. I really want to get to a world where, because right now we're stuck in, like, if you think about the Maslow hierarchy of needs, a lot of women are stuck on stage one because you have unmanaged period pain, recurrent vaginal infections, polycystic ovarian syndrome, so you can't go to work or participate in educational activities at the same level as people who don't have these diseases can. So I would, you know, define success for Day as we've helped with the creation of novel medical devices and diagnostic devices for women to be able to not be limited by our physiology.
And this leads me on to Day. Firstly, I just want to talk about something that has genuinely shocked me more than I thought I could be shocked. I am horrified by what I found out about the period products industry and what has gone on for years and what is continuing to go on. If it wasn't for people like you, what's happening?
Well, to begin with, it's one of the last greatly monopolized industries out there. So you don't have that many suppliers of tampon manufacturing machines. In fact, you only have one. There's a monopoly in Europe and they make all of the tampon manufacturing lines. On the other hand, you have this other monopolistic agent who buys the tampon manufacturing lines and then manufactures for every brand, whether you're buying organic, non-organic, they're all made on the same machines in the same facility using the same materials. And that's why tampons for such a long time have had the same absorbency profile, sustainability profile. And this industry as many other industries, is very profit-driven. So when period care products were first invented, we did work with organic materials like cotton or other natural fibers. Later, throughout the evolution of the tampon manufacturing industry, there was a transition to plastic fibers because plastic fibers run faster on tampon manufacturing lines, so you can make more tampons in the same time on the same machine. There was no utility for the patient or for the person using the tampon for us to start using petrol-derived plastics that are then pressing against the most absorbent mucosa in the human body, which is the vaginal mucosa. But you could run the fibers faster on the machine. So that's why now over 90% of period care products that we use are made with petrol-derived plastics. And for the same reason that you wouldn't chew on a piece of plastic for 5 days each month, it also makes zero sense that you would insert a piece of plastic vaginally for 5 or more days each month. But it was really hard for me to learn about the tampon industry because it's very closed off. So it took me years to even visit a tampon manufacturing facility for the first time, about 2 years. And the fact that I'm female, Eastern European, in my 20s, I could actually use to my advantage because I could play dumb. And, you know, I would always be underestimated. So I was finally let into a tampon manufacturing facility, which made me realize that tampons are treated as general hygiene products. So they're manufactured with the same standards that we apply to toilet paper. At the same time, other more items that we use very frequently, like plasters, hand sanitizer, they are treated as medical devices, but tampons which we place inside of our bodies are not. What this means on a practical level is that tampons are not manufactured in a clean room. They're not manufactured in a clean environment. And there's also no sanitization process. So you assume that, you know, you pick up a product off the shelf in a large supermarket chain and you think, oh, surely this is safe. Surely it's clean. Someone will have looked into it. But there's no regulatory body. There's no ISO standard that controls the manufacturing of tampons and period care products. So you can just do whatever you want. And there's an association of European tampon manufacturers, which the UK belongs to as well. And it has only 6 pages of guidelines. A lot of that are drawings. So one of the first things that we had to do a day, which I had no knowledge that we would have to bring manufacturing in-house when I was first starting the company. I thought, you know, we would just bring this idea to an outsourced manufacturer and they would be able to help us make the product. But I gradually realized that everyone uses the same machines. There's no cleanliness or medical device standards in the production. There's no sanitization at the end of the final product. And I just didn't feel comfortable.
So let's just put a beat there. If I'm hearing correctly, there's only basically one machine that creates all tampon products.
Globally.
So it doesn't matter what brand you use, you're using the same machine.
Yeah.
And they swapped cotton in for plastic fibers. Mm-hmm. So if you go into the supermarket, you will be buying standard tampons that have microplastics in them.
And not just microplastics, just petrol-derived plastics, which then, of course, shed microplastics. And they also degrade into microplastics in our oceans and on our beaches. But yes, over 90% of the tampon market today is made out of petrol-derived plastic fibers, not just in the packaging. So yes, the packaging is quite pollutive, the wrapper, the applicator, but the actual core of the tampon as well is also made out of petrol-derived fibers because they run faster on the machines.
This is shocking.
Yeah.
And this is a very kind of new revelation for me because the microplastics, they can have endocrine disrupting effects. Would you mind explaining a bit more about that?
Yeah, and we've seen that now in clinical studies as well. So I imagine some of the people that will be listening to this podcast will say, oh, I've been using conventional tampon brand for years and there's nothing wrong with me. Tampons are safe. Yes, the majority of tampons are safe for, you know, short periods of time. But when you use them over years and decades, the effect of having endocrine disruptive ingredients, microplastics in the most absorbent part of your body gradually builds up. And we don't yet have the complete scientific understanding of what the effects of having plastic in fibers, having PFAs, having endocrine disruptors in our period care is because no one has funded the research. So, you know, there will be some people that will say, well, tampons are safe. This is fear mongering. Everyone has to make their own decision. I personally wouldn't chew on a piece of plastic for 5 days each month, which is why I also don't feel comfortable putting a product out there that is made out of plastic and that is also unsanitized. So we have heard a lot about toxic shock syndrome. It's, you know, on the box of every tampon brand as a warning that you could purchase out there. Toxic shock is caused by two pathogens, staph and strep, which are sometimes found in the human body and sometimes inserted in the human body through period care products. If you have an unsanitized tampon, it's going to increase the risk of toxic shock syndrome. And for us, we actually had to fight really hard to win our right to sanitize our tampons because, you know, we can't set up a sanitization facility ourselves. We just started approaching existing sanitization facilities that, for example, sanitize surgical tools or other medical devices. And they just couldn't understand why we would want to sanitize tampons when we weren't legally required to. And similarly, in our conversations with regulators, because we're always fighting for a change in the industry so that we do have quality standards in period care manufacturing, not just for day, but for every period care company out there. When we've been speaking with regulators, I had this one particular ridiculous comment, which actually came from a woman. And she said, oh, there's lots of unsanitized things that go inside vaginas, referencing penises. So why should we sanitize tampons? And like we sanitize our food, we sanitize our clothes. Why do we not sanitize our period care products? You know, some of the arguments for why you shouldn't sanitize tampons or why you shouldn't produce them to medical device standards is that the tampon would become more expensive. But it's really not that expensive. Like a very small part of our costs is the cost of sanitizing or the cost of producing in a clean room. So there really isn't a reason why we shouldn't be doing it.
I've got shivers because I'm just so shocked. And obviously, thank God, we're going to talk about the things that you're doing differently. But for this moment in time, so many women, basically me up until I found Day, have just picked up the tampon brand that was there. And to hear that they've been unsanitized, the fact that they've got toxic chemicals in there, and we wonder why women's fertility is declining.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be on the consumer, right? Like not every consumer is a material scientist or a microbiologist. Like not everyone will send their tampons for a lab analysis. It needs to be the brand that takes this extra duty of care. But in my experience, the tampon lobby is quite strong.
So really?
In Europe, you know, we're banning single-use plastics. Why are we not banning the biggest definition of single-use plastics, which is plastic tampons and plastic pads? Period care products have received an exemption from the ban on single-use plastics multiple times. And we have the technology. It's not that we have to do, you know, these advanced novel scientific discoveries in order to produce non-plastic tampons. We already have the technology. But yes, I don't think that regulators take period product safety as seriously as they should.
So you've mentioned the campaign you've done against policymakers and to be able to sanitize your own products. But talk to me, how did Day begin and how on earth did you set up a tampon alternative when there's so much red tape?
I had my first painful period when I was really young. I was 9, and that was too young for anyone to have had a conversation with me about what to expect. At that time, when I had my first period, age 9, that was unusual. Now it's the average age that people start menstruating. I didn't even realize what was happening to my body was my menstrual cycle. I thought I had a disease or that I was dying, and I thought I shouldn't tell my parents because then they'll be worried. So I just kept it to myself. I didn't tell anyone for a year that I had started my period. And then a year later, I started having really terrible, debilitating cramps. I couldn't go to school. The only thing that would give me any relief was a really hot bath that would just relax all of my muscles. So my parents started noticing that, you know, I had to miss days of school every month. We had a conversation about what was actually happening. I got placed on oral hormonal contraception straight away, age 11, to manage my painful period. And oral hormonal contraception has a lot of side benefits. We focus a lot on the side effects, as we should. I think we should also explore the side benefits of hormonal contraception. It can be a really powerful tool, not just for contraceptive uses, but for, you know, supporting endometriosis and PCOS conditions. But the way in which we prescribe oral contraception and hormonal contraception in general is incredibly unsophisticated. it's so ad hoc. You know, you go to the GP or you go to your obstetrician if you're lucky to have one, and then they give you a form of contraception. You go away, you try it for 6 months, you come back, then you try again. On average, people try 6 different forms of contraception before they find one that works for them. Like, we should really be personalizing contraceptive prescriptions. But in my case, I was really young to have started contraception, and it did have an impact on my hormonal development and the health of my ovaries. So I started developing these really painful ovarian cysts, which then had to be operated on. I missed another year from school because, like, complete year, because I was just stuck in bed, debilitating pain, couldn't get out of bed, couldn't focus on anything. It was finally after a year of examinations where I got tested for UTIs, kidney disease, IBS, every, you know, potential condition. Someone finally gave me an intravaginal exam with a wand, and they discovered that I was starting to grow these like huge ovarian cysts, which were pressing on my ovary and cutting off the blood supply to the ovary. And then I faced another example of the gender gap in diagnosis, which is that one doctor was saying, yes, we need to operate straight away. I got admitted into hospital. I got prepared for surgery in the next morning, you know, shaved, given a gown, everything. And then in the morning, there was a new doctor who was doing the next shift. And he said, no, we will definitely never operate on this. And just this frustrating experience of not getting answers, feeling so violated, feeling so restricted in what I could do with my life because of my physiology, is what really inspired me to want to do something in gynecological health. Now that I'm older, you know, I've had conversations with my friends and my peers, and I've realized that my experience is not in any way unique. It, in fact, is the norm for most people. 1 in 3 women will have a chronic gynecological health condition in their lifetime.
1 in 3 women will have a gynecological problem in their lifetime.
Yeah, it's incredibly common. But the lack of funding for research means that we understand the female physiology so poorly. And until 1993 in the US and 97 in the UK, the predominant view was that women had to be protected as the vessels of life. Therefore, we should be excluded from clinical trials on novel pharmaceuticals or novel medical devices. So we really don't understand how most medications today affect the female physiology. And we also don't understand what causes gynecological health disease. So knowing how pervasive this issue is, and knowing how, you know, limited my time on earth is, I feel gynecological health is one of the most important spaces that you can be in, and one of the most meaningful things that you can do with your life. So I've committed my life to gynecological health.
I didn't even think about my ovaries up until the last few years. But, you know, sadly, you've had to think about your ovaries from a very young age. Yeah. And when we were talking before, I had no idea just how pervasive and chronic the problem of gynecological health is for women. What is the most common problem you are finding through your research with Day?
Vaginal infections. So every woman will have at least one vaginal infection in her lifetime, and 1 in 4 women will have a recurrent vaginal infection. So this is where you have thrush or bacteriovaginosis once, and then it keeps coming back. And the fact that we have so deeply stigmatized vaginal infections when they are so incredibly common is just beyond me. You would never feel ashamed to tell someone that you have the flu or that you have a cold, which is a lot less common than vaginal infections. Yet we're so afraid to talk about vaginal infections. We think that we're the only ones that have, you know, recurrent yeast or recurrent BV, a recurrent UTI, when that's not at all the case. And all of these conditions can be so debilitating. You know, we have one patient who recently used our diagnostic tampon, and she had vaginal symptoms for 10 years. She couldn't have sex. She couldn't exercise. At some point, her vaginal symptoms became so bad, itching, burning, irritation. She couldn't exercise. She couldn't walk. She kept going from one doctor to the next, you know, seeking treatment, seeking a diagnosis. She couldn't get one. And finally, before she turned today, she was given antidepressants for her vaginal infection because her doctor said, I don't see anything that's wrong with you. My tests are not showing anything. I think it's all in your mind. But she wasn't even told that the medication that she was prescribed was antidepressants. She found out when she went home with the prescription and she Googled it. And yeah, why are we giving women antidepressants for their vaginal infections instead of trying to understand the pathogen that's causing that infection and treating that specific pathogen? But due to budget restrictions on the NHS, Most women only get tested for yeast and bacterial vaginosis. There's a lot of other pathogens that could be causing the same or similar symptoms, only you wouldn't know that that was the real cause of your persistent infection unless you got tested with a more comprehensive test, which is what happened with this patient. So she found out that she has ureaplasma, which is one type of vaginal pathogen that gives you similar symptoms. But she couldn't get treatment for ureaplasma through the NHS because of concerns around antimicrobial resistance doesn't treat ureaplasma. So what she had to do was phone up her partner's family physician in another country in Europe, show him her results, and then he shipped the treatment to her from another country.
This is absolutely madness. But you have created a solution, or you've created many solutions. So I want to begin by talking about the diagnostic tampon, if we can go as simple and as basic as possible, because I'm sure for many people listening, everybody might be like, what is a diagnostic tampon?
Yeah. So we've known that tampons are a better way to obtain a sample from the vagina compared to swabs since the 1980s. So the first clinical trials that were published on this with decent size patient population, so 120 patients, were from the 1980s. And the swab was never designed for the vagina, right? The swab was designed for the nose, it was designed for the throat, and we repurposed it for vaginal screening as well. But the vagina is significantly longer and larger, so the tiny tip that you have at the swab doesn't pick up all of the pathogens that are in your vaginal canal.
And yet we didn't do anything about it.
No. But there's this big valley of innovation debt in gynecological health where good ideas, due to lack of funding, just slowly wither away. So I found these initial publications from the 1980s and then the 1990s, and I read them and I thought to myself, okay, so we could potentially conduct our own clinical trials and see if we can use DAZE tampon with the applicator for at-home STI, vaginal infections, and HPV screening. So that was in 2018. And then since then, we've completed clinical trials with over 1,000 patients now, showing that the tampon as a sample collection method is superior to urine, it's superior to vaginal swabs, and it's significantly more patient-friendly. So not a lot of people know how to use a swab at home. It's long, it's intimidating, it's bulky, whereas most people have used a tampon at least once in their lifetime. So it's a friendlier and more familiar way for you to obtain a sample at home from your vagina, and then you ship it back through the postal service or through a courier to one of our labs. And then in the lab, we use quantitative PCR, so the same technology that was developed for COVID testing and became really accessible during COVID testing, to screen for a number of different pathogens which could be causing your vaginal symptoms.
And what are some common pathogens?
So STIs are very common. STIs are really on the rise post-COVID. There's been a 25% year-over-year increase in chlamydia, gonorrhea, trichomonas in the UK because people stopped getting screened, so they passed STIs to each other at a greater rate. And STIs are like the flu, right? Most of them are perfectly well treatable. You can just get a round of antibiotics. Again, they shouldn't be stigmatized. They're nothing to be too afraid about. But it's really important to proactively and regularly get tested for STIs, because due to the female physiology, as many as 70% of female STIs are asymptomatic. So you wouldn't know you had one unless you got tested. And having an untreated STI for a long period of time can lead to scarring of the ovarian tubes, disruptions to your vaginal microbiome, chronic pelvic pain. So it's really important to get tested for STIs on a regular basis, you know, every time you change sexual partners or at least once a year. So STIs are really common. Vaginal infections like thrush and bacterial vaginosis are really common. But in order to personalize the treatment and to maximize the efficacy of the treatment that you're getting, you really need to know exactly what's causing these vaginal symptoms, which are really similar. You know, chlamydia, trichomonas, gonorrhea, bacterial vaginosis, thrush, they can all appear with very similar symptoms.
What are some symptoms people should be looking out for and may look into getting a test if they're having them?
So changes in your vaginal discharge, color, consistency, volume, itching, burning, irritation, if it hurts when you pee, if it hurts when you have sex, those are some of the symptoms. But it's really important to remember that you're lucky if you have the symptoms, because so many of us don't have the symptoms. So your body wouldn't tell you to get tested.
So do you recommend people just having a yearly vaginal screening with this diagnostic tampon, just to be sure, and to even if it's the beginning of an STI, they're catching it early?
In most countries, women have an OBGYN and they see their OBGYN at least once a year. So I was really surprised when I first moved to the UK and I realized that OBGYNs here are mostly surgeons. So they specialize in surgery, and it's your GP and a sexual health nurse that will serve as your OBGYN. So there is a huge loss of, you know, continuity of knowledge and knowing the patient and knowing their medical history by us not having specialized OBGYNs in the UK. So it's normal in the majority of countries in the world to get screened for STIs and vaginal infections and just check in on your vaginal health at least once a year. So I definitely think people should do that in the UK as well.
It is really bizarre, our kind of different approach here to gynecologists and OBGYNs. And I feel that people do not invest in that area because I think it's fine until it's not, unless you're having pain. I think we all avoid going to the doctor. Another reason I was so excited to talk to you is because you've actually made seeing a gynecologist a lot easier and also much cheaper, actually. How did you do that? Because even to find all these gynecologists, it's probably not the easiest task as it is.
No, but you know me, so you know I don't like to do things, you know, halfway.
And also, can you tell us a bit, how do you connect people with gynecologists for anyone who's interested?
So after you take your diagnostic tampon screen, you get your results. A lot of people might be intimidated by the results, confused, or, you know, potentially scared if they have a pathogen. So before we introduced diagnostic tampon, we knew that we would have to build a telemedical aftercare layer to go alongside it so that no one would ever be stuck with a set of confused or potentially troubling results. So what we have now is the ability for everyone to book a video consultation or a phone call, whatever you prefer, with a sexual health nurse, a fertility nurse, or an OBGYN. If you don't want to speak with someone via video or a phone call, you can also book an in-person appointment. And then we work with CQC certified pharmacies. So if you see your results, you see you have chlamydia, you're not bothered by it, you already have the knowledge that chlamydia is common, it's easily treatable, you just want a prescription treatment sent to your door, we can send you your medication to your door. Which, by the way, is really important because in the UK, about 40% of people drop out from the treatment cycle. So you get your results from your sexual health clinic via SMS, and then you're like, oh, what do I do? You have to go back, you have to get a prescription, then you have to have that prescription filled by a pharmacy. About 40% of people drop off at the stage, so they don't get the treatment that they need.
Wow.
Yeah. So what we wanted to do was find vetted, empathetic physicians who would go through a day training process. So we would be sure that they are familiar with all of the latest clinical research, all of the latest treatment guidelines. And once they've been through this vetting and training process, we allow them to see patients on our platform so that a consultation with our sexual or fertility health nurses that have over 20 years of experience costs £29. So we wanted to make it as affordable and accessible as possible so you can get answers and personalized care.
Can only women in the UK access this, or in what other countries is this available?
So it's in the UK and the US right now, and Germany is where we're expanding to next.
Amazing. So in America, this service is just as it is here. Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. Because in America, I find the cost of access to information about your vagina basically inaccessible.
And there's really long waiting lists now. So to see an OB in the US, you have to typically wait between 2 and 4 months. You can't just walk in.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So you didn't start in the diagnostic tampon area. You actually began in really addressing how to support women who had chronic period pain. Mm. Tell us about that. And how on earth do you reduce period pain? Because I'm sure a lot of people listening, that's the first question they'd want to ask.
Yeah, so we have two approaches. The first one is our cannabidiol tampon, which is clinically validated. It's certified as a medical device. And then our second approach is the period pain clinic, which is a virtual tool for you to understand what's causing your period pain. So is that endometriosis, adenomyosis, PCOS, fibroids, chronic pelvic inflammation, or dysmenorrhea, which is the medical term for period pain. And once we've helped you understand what causes your period pain, we then prescribe pharmaceutical and holistic treatments that are based on your specific health profile. The reason why I'm personally really passionate about solving for period pain is that I think it's one of the most underappreciated and trivialized issues in gynecological health. It's considered to be not that deep or not that serious. And since you're a little girl, you're taught period pain's normal. You're just preparing for the pains of labor. If you can't bear your period pain, how are you ever going to deliver a baby, grit your teeth through it? And we really trivialized and normalized the experience of period pain, and we don't in any way account for the social and economic costs of period pain. So people with endometriosis, for example, in the UK can forego as much as £40,000 in earned income in the time that it takes them to obtain a diagnosis, so they can then also obtain treatments. To get a diagnosis in the UK on endometriosis, the average cost is about £800.
So just to go over that, they're losing out potentially on £40,000 of income.
Yep.
And it costs them around £800 just to get diagnosed with endometriosis.
Yeah. And the British Medical Journal says that women lose between 8 and 12 productive days each year to period pain. So how are we not accounting for this as, you know, societies, economies? Like, there's a huge consequence of us trivializing period pain to the level that we have trivialized it to. So day's pain relieving tampon, it works as a regular tampon. So you insert it vaginally. It absorbs your menstrual fluid from the top of the tampon as it's
full. So if you have period pain, you can go on today, you find a tampon and that basically is designed to address period pain. How does it do this?
Cannabinoids have a really rich history of alleviating gynecological pain. Some of the earliest accounts that we have of this are from the physician diaries for the physician who looked after Queen Victoria, who most probably had endometriosis herself. She would excuse herself from public duties for long periods of time while she was menstruating. And one of the interventions that her physician found was effective was hemp tincture. So our pain-relieving tampons are based on a similar premise that you can use cannabinoids in order to locally, in a targeted way, ease menstrual cramps. And our clinical data is published in the Journal of Endometriosis and Uterine Disorders, showing efficacy in alleviating period pain. We've now helped over 100,000 patients in the UK with this tampon. And what we know from post-market surveillance data is that it works better than painkillers with fewer side effects and for a bigger percentage of the general population. Because going back to the fact that most medications weren't designed for the female physiology, they weren't tested on the female physiology, very few people find relief for their menstrual cramps from over-the-counter painkillers. We know anecdotally that a lot of our friends who have period pain take more ibuprofen or paracetamol than they should because they can't find relief. So they up the dose. Different studies say different things, but between 20 and 35% of people find relief for their period pain from over-the-counter painkillers. So we really need innovative solutions for treating period pain. And the vagina is really underestimated as a drug delivery route. If you take another example, which is the abortion pill, if you take the exact same formulation, so no changes in the formulation, of the abortion pill orally, it works in about 38 hours. If you take the same formulation vaginally, the effect starts in 8 hours, and there's a 2% increase in the efficacy rate. So we've known for a long time that the vagina is a safe and effective mechanism to deliver medications in women. The reason why it's safer than the oral route is because when you take a medication vaginally, you don't affect the digestive tract, you don't affect the liver, it gets recycled through the kidneys and the pelvic organs. So any medication that's delivered vaginally is in most cases significantly safer than a medication that's delivered orally. You can also have a lower dose, which further increases the safety profile. But again, because the vaginal drug delivery route contains the word vagina in it, it's stigmatized, it's underappreciated, it's underfunded. So we're not utilizing it in the way that we should.
And how do you create it? How do you build it with cannabinoids?
Yeah, so one of the reasons why our solution isn't better known is that we're subject to bans on large advertising platforms like Meta, Google, TikTok.
No, stop it. I can't. I'm like, what is wrong with the world? So the government limit funding into this research area. They have crazy policies. They allow horrendous tampons to be on the market, poisoning us. And now our technology platforms don't even allow you to advertise healthier tampons.
Yeah, we can't. We're categorized as adult content or political content. Frequently, like on a daily basis, our ads get taken down.
This is so corrupt.
So this isn't something that's only affecting they. The New York Times did an investigation into this a few years ago, and they spoke with over 60 companies in the gynecological health space, from breastfeeding to menopause, who can't advertise their products online. They can't use the same tools that are available for, you know, Viagra prescriptions or boner pills delivered to your door. That's totally fine. But if you talk about anything to do with gynecological health, you get placed in the same category as pornography or violence or crime or political content.
Do you know if anyone has gone to Meta and started fighting and protesting outside their doors?
We have done that multiple times, but there's also an organization called the Center for Intimacy Justice, which is a coalition of companies in the femtech space who, you know, have gone to Congress, have gone to Meta, have gone to Google, have gone to TikTok, have gone to all of these platforms saying, please don't categorize female health products in the same category as porn. But you know, this is a very pervasive issue. Female healthcare is very frequently sexualized and female patients are over-sexualized all the time. One of the largest studies into endometriosis that was ever conducted was a study from Italy from 2012, where the researchers, using public funding, measured whether patients with endometriosis were perceived to be more attractive or not. How this helps anyone with endometriosis is beyond me. And the way that they measured attractiveness was on the basis of how large your breasts were, how thin your waist was, and when you had sex for the first time, how old you were when you had sex for the first time. And this was a study publicly funded, peer-reviewed, which means a bunch of scientists sat in a room and said, yep, that's valid scientific research. Let's publish that for the world to see. And it got published in a peer-reviewed research journal. Female patients are very frequently over-sexualized because we're only used to talking about the female body or seeing it in a sexual context. And I actually see that when I have investor conversations. There's two main groups that most investors fall into. Group one thinks that I'm flirting because I'm talking about gynecological health or vaginas. Group two are just so deeply uncomfortable. They just stare at the ground or look at their watch and they can't wait to get me out of the room.
You were sharing at the beginning when we were talking that funding into gynecological health has gone down. Mm-hmm. Would you mind sharing a bit more about that?
So only 2.4% of public funding in the UK goes to gynecological health. So if you have 100% of public funding that goes to healthcare, only 2.4% of that goes to the entirety of women's health, from endometriosis to menopause to fertility conditions. Private funding, it's even worse. Less than 1% of venture capital that goes to healthcare goes to women's health. And post-COVID, there's actually been a reduction in the number of female-led companies that have received venture capital funding. And one of the most frustrating statistics that I recently came across is that over 70% of the companies in gynecological health that received funding were led by male CEOs.
Oh, this needs to change. Thankfully, the industry has you in it, so I feel that change must happen. But going back to this cannabinoid tampon, because I know I interrupted you, I didn't let you finish. How have you worked out why it is so effective? What is it about the cannabinoids in this tampon? And again, going back to how did you even create it, that is able to relieve pain?
Yeah, so cannabinoids are a very controversial industry. And when I was first starting the company in 2017, there was the potential that the industry was going to evolve in a more scientific direction. And unfortunately, that hasn't really materialized. And instead, it's been like a profit-driven exercise where people add cannabinoids to shampoo, mascara, you know, dog treats, and all sorts of irrelevant products. However, they do have a valid use case in gynecological health. The way that cannabinoids work is through activating our endocannabinoid system. So we have an endocannabinoid system, like we have a nervous system in our body, we have endocannabinoid receptors. So ingesting cannabinoids activates that endocannabinoid system, which is responsible for modulating our response to pain, our sleep. That's why, you know, when people consume THC, they, you know, feel sleepier. It's because of the endocannabinoid system. Now, our product doesn't contain THC. It only contains medical grade cannabinoids, which are extracted from organic hemp. Taking a step back here, one of the reasons why the cannabinoids industry is so controversial is because people don't really differentiate between THC and cannabinoids, and they don't differentiate between industrial hemp and cannabis. So they're two separate plants, but they're sister plants, and they look similar. So for decades and decades, during the ban on cannabis, you know, growing cannabis, researching cannabis, industrial hemp was also banned, even though it doesn't contain THC. There's no psychotropic substances in industrial hemp. You can't get high from it, regardless of how much you consume. But because of these legal restrictions and the equation between industrial hemp and cannabis, we have very little clinical research on industrial hemp. In 2016 in the UK and in 2019 in the US, the legislation changed so people could start studying industrial hemp. And that's what we did. We ran clinical trials, we developed an effective formulation, and we then had to develop manufacturing lines as well that would make a tampon that has a coating of our cannabinoid formulation so that it can press against the walls of the vaginal canal, which are the vaginal mucosa, which, as we discussed, is highly absorbent and a great route to deliver medications through.
I'd love to talk about fertility because it's something that I'm really interested in at the moment, and through my own fertility journey, but also looking at kind of these macro trends in fertility and more people, I guess, having troubles with it. Mm. What have you learned about fertility through this enormous journey into gynecological health, and where are you seeing the trends, and what do you advise to anyone, and at what age do you believe women should be thinking about their fertility, regardless if they want children at that moment?
And one of the biggest blind spots in fertility today is the role that your vaginal microbiome plays in implantation and carrying a pregnancy to term. The research on the importance of the vaginal microbiome is actually significantly older than the research we have on the gut microbiome, for example, or the skin microbiome. But the vaginal microbiome has really been neglected. So very few people know that the vaginal microbiome determines whether you will have a successful IVF outcome, whether you'll be able to have a baby naturally, to conceive naturally, and your risk of preterm labor and miscarriage. They're all connected to whether you have a good balance of good and bad bacteria in your vaginal microbiome. So you can think about the vaginal microbiome as a type of immune system to your overall reproductive tract, which modulates a lot of your reproductive health functions. And until COVID, vaginal microbiome screening used to be a cost prohibitive procedure because PCR technologies were really expensive. Now, after COVID, the cost of PCR has gone down dramatically. So where vaginal microbiome screening used to cost over £2,000, you can now access it for £80 or £90. And there's other providers that offer it for about £400. So my advice is that for anyone that wants to conceive in the future, wants to have an IVF cycle, screen your vaginal microbiome first so that you confirm you don't have BV, you don't have a yeast infection, you don't have an STI, or you don't have ureaplasma and mycoplasma, which are two pathogens that make it harder for the egg to implant itself, for the fetus to develop. And also they have an impact on sperm, so they can affect the motility of sperm.
And this may be a totally unrelated thought and actually may have no connection. But as far as I understand, when a baby is delivered, obviously, if you're having a natural birth, the baby is absorbing, taking in some of
swallowing
the microbiome of the mother's vagina. And then that begins the baby's actual microbiome mm-hmm. in their stomach.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really important to have a healthy vaginal microbiome during pregnancy. If you are delivering vaginally, you will then be able to pass on the, you know, richest, most diverse microbiome to your baby. And we know so much now about how the gut microbiome affects your mental health, your immune system, and a variety of other functions. So during pregnancy, it's really important to have a healthy vaginal microbiome, which you can do through, you know, supplementing with clinically validated probiotics or just increasing the amount of probiotic-rich foods that you consume, like kefir, kimchi, leafy greens, because there's a direct axis between your gut and your vaginal microbiome. They're really connected. That's why you may have experienced this yourself, but when you take antibiotics, you are more likely to develop a yeast infection afterwards in your vagina, because antibiotics kill the good and the bad bacteria indiscriminately. So every time you take antibiotics, contraception, smoking, semen, those are all factors that affect the health of your vaginal microbiome. And I really feel strongly that we should all have a greater awareness of the importance of the vaginal microbiome and the easy steps that you can take to better manage your vaginal microbiome. One really interesting study from Harvard came out about 10 years ago. There's a relationship between the health of the mother's vaginal microbiome during vaginal delivery and the child's motor skills and cognitive capacity. I always like to reference the study because we're so quick as humans to be so self-congratulatory and to think that all of our successes have to do with our, you know, incredible smarts and all of that. But imagine something that you have absolutely no control over. The health of your mother's vaginal microbiome during delivery then impacts your cognitive skills, motor skills, etc. later down the line.
That's amazing. You actually developed a probiotic, mm-hmm. a vaginal probiotic. What was the process of doing that? Because, again, I'm sure people can go into the supplement lines. We'll hear this podcast. Okay, we need to improve our vaginal microbiome or we need to support it in some way. But not all probiotics are created equally, because it is confusing. One has 5 million, whatever. Yeah. Another has 10 million. And you actually have no idea where to go. So what was your approach?
Yeah, so I did another deep dive into the supplements and probiotics industry and was also uncovered a lot of really interesting and unexpected things. Most lactobacilli strains that are available in, you know, commercial probiotics are derived from human breast milk. Didn't know that, but that's what they're derived from. Ours is vegan because it's less likely to cause disruption to your gut or if you have any allergies or sensitivities. But the way that we approached developing our, you know, biotherapeutic probiotic treatment, we first started looking at strains that have clinical data behind them on their efficacy in repopulating the levels of good bacteria in the vagina and the gut and inhibiting the growth of negative pathogens like Candida, Gardnerella, which is the pathogen responsible for bacterial vaginosis. So we started with lab tests. We then proceeded to human clinical trials. We tested the probiotic with patients, some were pregnant, some weren't, that had thrush yeast infections. And we saw that by taking the probiotic vaginally, they reduced their levels of yeast infections, thrush, and were able to clear the infection faster. Then we started thinking about how we would manufacture the product. So we would, again, increase safety and efficacy. And most probiotic bacteria are dead by the time that you swallow them. It's really hard to keep a probiotic bacteria alive. You know, it's a living being. So if you just store it on a shelf, it's most probably going to die. So we started freeze drying our probiotics, which is the same technology that's used to preserve astronauts' food. And this allows the probiotic to go to sleep. And then when you ingest it through the heat of your body, it reawakens and it actually, you know, reaches your gut alive. It reaches your vaginal microbiome alive and it can have an impact. The other thing that I saw when I was researching the probiotics industry is that a lot of the probiotic bacteria are contained in gelatin capsules, have lots of fillers, additives. So we created a technology that enables us to just hard compress our tablet. So you don't have any capsule, there's no filler, there's no additives, there's no allergens. You just have the good hard compressed friendly lactobacilli. You swallow it or you ingest it vaginally. And then that's how the bacteria reaches your gut or your vagina. And then the other thing that's important to check when you're choosing a probiotic is whether the specific strain and the formulation have been tested in the acidity of the gut or the vagina. Mm. Because sometimes the acidity of the gut and the vagina can kill the probiotic. But you can test for that to ensure that your strain doesn't die.
Honestly, I just wish every company, especially health company, had a founder and CEO like you who actually does the research and wants to create products that actually work. And it's so shocking that probably 98% of the things on the market do not go through the same rigor. If you could sit down with every woman, now that you know so much about women's health in particular, what would you want to say to them?
The period pain isn't normal and you shouldn't suffer through it in silence. And there are solutions for your period pain, whatever it's caused by. And that vaginal infections are not normal. And, you know, you shouldn't let them stop you enjoying your sex life or enjoying your exercise. And that personalized healthcare is really important. It's really important to understand exactly what's causing your symptoms. So then you can have targeted treatments rather than, you know, just general antidepressants or other general medications that are repurposed for women's health.
On that note, Valentina, this has just been one of the most educational, enlightening, sadly shocking in a good way, because at least we are highlighting problems that you've actually created solutions for. So where is the best place for people to ask questions to you? And also, I mean, obviously we'll put a link to Day in the show notes, but any final words before we go that you'd like to share?
What I hope to create with Day is this evergreen mechanism for continuously innovating in gynecological health. So the model that we have is one whereby we invest our revenues into an ongoing cycle of product development and product innovation. And my hope is that at some point, you know, we will develop this really sustainable mechanism where we have commercially successful products that generate revenues. These revenues are then reinvested into further R&D, so we can finally bridge the gender health gap and finally bridge the gender diagnosis gap. And in terms of where you can find us, yourday.com and at yourday, D-A-Y-E. And I read all of our Instagram messages. I do shifts in customer support, so I do respond to everything that people say.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for educating us. And truly thank you for the work that you do in this field, because if it wasn't for people like you, God knows where we'd be and what we'd be putting into our bodies.
Thank you for giving Gynecological Health a platform.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoyed today, please hit subscribe and leave a comment, because this helps the podcast so much. I'd be endlessly grateful if you wouldn't mind doing so. My mental health book, Happy Not Perfect, is available to order now. The book teaches you how to be a flexible thinker, a skill that helps you navigate any challenge that might come your way, helps you manage emotions, and helps you thrive to be the bendiest version of yourself. Until next time, I love hearing from you, so do shoot me a message on Instagram, send me a DM with any of your thoughts. Stay safe and well.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.